Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Erin Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are joined by Joan Nichols. She is Executive Director of the Connecticut Farm Bureau Association. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Nice to see you and hear from you, Erin. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, we spoke 6 months or so ago, and things were looking up in many parts of Connecticut agriculture after a shutdown and a shock last spring as the COVID-19 pandemic was setting in. And I know right off the bat, Easter was really rough for a lot of your growers who grow Easter plants and things like that. How was Easter this year?
I think this year they had a much better year. I think all of us are just because of COVID, and then just spring in general, everybody just sort of likes to, you know, loves that this time of year when the flowers are blooming and the weather's starting to warm up and you can get outside. And I believe our growers had a much better Easter season this year. Of course, the retail establishments were open so people could go and purchase Easter plants. I don't know how much family visitation was going on. You know, because of COVID, people may still be conservative in family gatherings, but you know, the retail establishments that I frequented, the Easter plants and spring flowers were flying off the shelves. So I think that's a good sign for any of our growers that are supplying the local retail establishment.
Now, last year, business was very uneven. You had the shutdown and then a spike in business for a lot of your growers. Are you hoping things are more even this year?
I think we're optimistic in two areas. I think one is that the keen interest and renewed interest in procuring your local fruits and vegetables and produce from your local farms, that so many of our farms enjoyed that spike in business last year. We're really optimistic that the consumers are going to, you know, maintain that level of support for our local farms. So we're hoping that level of activity will continue this year. I think the farms are far more prepared this year than they were last year. I think that spike in business, while they appreciated it, we heard from all of our farm employers that they really had to scramble to meet that consumer demand, but also to a new way of interacting with their consumers, whether they had to overnight launch online, orders, or they had to arrange curbside pickups versus people coming into the stores or into the farm stands. So I think that they're far more prepared this year, and I think they're looking forward to another really good retail season. And I think our consumers have had a taste, no pun intended, of what it's like to get a fresh strawberry grown in Connecticut versus someplace 2,000 miles away. And we're hoping that our consumers support our local farms.
Certainly, direct-to-consumer was one of the bright spots last year. Not so bright was the business serving to restaurants. How are our farmers that provide their food to restaurants doing? Has that come back?
I don't think that has come back yet. I mean, the restaurants are slowly opening. I think with the nicer weather, those restaurants that were set up to serve customers outdoors, but I don't think that market has come back to full strength. Our aquaculture industry, our shellfishermen really, really suffered with the shutdown of restaurants and catering facilities last year. And they're starting to see an uptick in that market. Of course, they're shipping their fresh shellfish products that are grown in Connecticut shellfish grounds in Long Island Sound. We have 60,000 acres of shellfish ground in Long Island Sound, and they're starting to ship product all up and down the East Coast, and they've seen an uptick in orders. So while we may not have seen a complete uptick in the local marketplace and our local restaurants, they have been able to ship product to other states, and we're optimistic that as Connecticut and our region opens up a little bit more and safely, I commend our governor for being as conscientious as he was in keeping us all safe. As we start to get into the season, we're hoping that the shell fishermen see a rebound in their season as well, as will the other producers.
Has the support from the state and federal governments been adequate for Connecticut agriculture?
Oh, I think so. I think the federal government did an amazing job of recognizing and helping out agriculture nationally, but both in the, you know, nationally and in the state of Connecticut. I know many of the farmers took advantage of the different loan programs or the PPP loans or the EIDL loans, along with some of the other programs that help them fill the void in the marketplace. So I think the federal government did an amazing job. And I think the state of Connecticut did a very good job. I think most importantly in trying to keep everybody safe and healthy. And that helps all businesses and all everybody and all the residents of the state of Connecticut. If we can stay safe and healthy, we'll in the long run be able to open up our businesses and our farms again and maybe get back to some type of normal. And of course, the vaccines are all coming out. Myself personally, I'll be getting my second vaccine on Friday. So that's certainly going to help everything as well. The state's done an amazing job with that.
Where do farm workers stand in the vaccine rollout? Are they just part of the general population based on age?
To some extent, they're part of the general population, but I literally was just on a call about 20 minutes ago on this subject matter, and the Connecticut Department of Public Health and all of the healthcare workers and facilities that serve the seasonal and migrant farm workers were actually just had a call to make sure that we can coordinate vaccines into this seasonal market of farm workers that come in this time of year. So the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Labor and all of the state agencies are working very diligently to reach out to the farming communities and get all of these, our farm workers vaccinated as well. So everybody's keenly aware of the importance of that population and how much they contribute to the farm, to our farm businesses, and the state's working really hard to reach out to that population.
Considering all that has transpired over the past year, how much has changed for good in agriculture? Is more direct-to-consumer here to stay, would you say?
I think that even before the COVID pandemic broke out, I think many of our farmers have recognized that the added value that they can bring to their product and that direct consumer marketing really helps increase and sustain farm profitability. So I think many of our farms were already, having that as part of their business model. They may do some wholesale, but they were also, you know, doing CSAs, community supported agriculture, where you buy shares in a product in advance of the season. So many of the farms had already launched that. I think COVID really piqued that interest and grew that business model. One of the examples I like to use is Oak Ridge Dairy up in Ellington, owned by the Baylor family. They launched the Modern Milkman, which is a direct delivery of their fresh milk products. And they had launched that ahead of COVID. And then when COVID broke out, that their orders just skyrocketed. So there's a classic example of a dairy farm that wholesales a lot of their milk, but launched into consumer retail, and it really did well for them. So I think that this is a trend that we're going to see to continue. And I think the farms are taking advantage of that consumer marketplace, and it's treated the farms well. And we hope that the consumers are benefiting and enjoying all the fresh product that they're getting.
Now, you go to a farmer's market, you go to the grocery store, you see the signs that say Connecticut Grown. That program mm-hmm. has been around for a long time, but it's getting a refresh. Tell us what's happening.
We were so excited to see that. So actually, just a few weeks ago, the Department of Agriculture, and we joined Governor Lamont at Jeremiah's Greenhouses in Wallingford, and we all enjoyed the sort of official launch of the new Connecticut Grown initiative. There's a new logo, and the Department of Agriculture has partnered with a marketing consultant to really increase the awareness of Connecticut grown products in to the consumer, in the media, in retail establishments. And we've been hearing from our farmers for a while that the Connecticut grown program is great, but it needed a little bit more of a boost. And of course, that takes time and money to really get it right. And I think the agency did an amazing job. We saw some of the videos they've been producing and some of the photography that they've done to really showcase the diversity and beauty of Connecticut's farms and the products. And the agency did a phenomenal job with that. And we're really excited to start to see more of that in our media. So I think we're hoping that that's going to help boost consumer awareness and also help our farms get more of their product into the marketplace.
Because the Connecticut Grown program was born in really a different time. There wasn't social media. I don't know if there was the internet when it was started. So things are getting more high tech.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The videos, I can't wait to have people see them wherever they're going to launch them, on television stations or on social media. They're incredibly, incredibly well done. And it's really nice to see a video featuring one of the farmers that you have a good relationship with and have them showcase in such a beautiful manner. So the agency, the Department of Agriculture, has done a great job with that. And we appreciate Governor Lamont, you know, supporting that initiative. It was nice to see him at the kickoff.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Joan Nichols, Executive Director of the Connecticut Farm Bureau Association. You talked a little about the diversity of Connecticut agriculture. We talked about strawberries and shellfish and plants that you're going to buy at the greenhouse and put in your yard. Remind us what else is included in Connecticut agriculture.
Oh, the breadth of Connecticut agriculture is amazing. And in fact, when we here at Connecticut Farm Bureau host farm bureaus from other parts of the country, they're amazed at, as a small state as Connecticut, the diversity that we have. So we have our forest products industry. We grow tobacco for the cigar industry. In fact, Connecticut tobacco is some of the best tobacco in the world, and it's grown in our river valley. So that's a unique and amazing product to Connecticut. Of course, we have our nursery industry. We still have a robust dairy industry. We have a livestock industry. And then we can't forget about our Christmas trees, maple syrup. We just came out of the maple syrup season a few weeks ago. And then, of course, our vineyards. You know, we have more and more vineyards opening up. And then we've also had an interest in farm distilleries as well as breweries. So there's farms starting to grow hops and grains for both the farm brewery industry and the distillery industry. So it's amazing. You know, we have woods, we have the shoreline, we have some of the best agricultural soils in the world in the river valley. And then we also have our livestock industry and our greenhouse industry. So it's and we have poultry. We have the third largest egg producer in the United States in Eastern Connecticut. So we have a robust egg industry as well as other poultry. So turkeys, chickens. So I think you name it. If you enjoy a particular product, you can buy it and find it in Connecticut.
So I know it varies a lot depending on what farmers are growing, what they're producing. But generally speaking, if you have crops that are going in the ground this time of year for harvest in the summer or the fall, what's going on at a Connecticut farm in mid-April?
By this time of year, our greenhouse industry is at full swing. They actually fire up their greenhouses, in February for their starter plants. So, you know, by this time of year, anybody that's growing in a controlled environment like a greenhouse or a high tunnel has already have product that's getting into the marketplace, your nursery products that we spoke about, your flowers and your annuals, as well as your perennials are coming in. And then we have many farms that are starting to put in high tunnels and grow fresh vegetables in more of a controlled indoor environment so they can get a jump on the growing season. So we have some farms that started plants in high tunnels. So pretty soon you'll start to see sort of your cold weather vegetables come out, your lettuces and your greens and your microgreens are coming out, and then the farms are also ramping up for berry and strawberry season. We always look forward to fresh strawberries coming out, you know, in the early summer. And then they're also planting all of their annuals and all the vegetables that they'll be harvesting through the season and all the way into fall when you get into your fall squash and pumpkins and all of that. So this is a busy time of year. And like I said, with so many farms looking at doing indoor agriculture, they're even starting to go into the early winter, you know, late winter months with product that, you know, can withstand some of the hardier temperatures. So our farmers are very innovative, and they're trying to extend the growing season, and they're doing a remarkable job with it.
How has the technology of farming changed over the years?
Well, that's a great question, a very timely question. So just a few weeks ago, I was up at a farm in Woodstock, Woodstock Creamery at the Young Farm, and they just installed robotic milkers. So now their cows are being milked with robots. Of course, there's still the farmers there, and you still need all of that that human interaction to maintain a full-time dairy, but they brought in robotic milkers. Like I said, we have farms that are looking at more indoor agriculture, both just high tunnels and hoop houses, as well as the more sophisticated greenhouses where they can grow all year long. They're looking at more energy efficient ways of heating greenhouses and energy efficiencies on the farm. We have one farm that has just launched an anaerobic digester, Fort Hill Farm up in Thompson, Connecticut. The Orr family, and they just launched their anaerobic digester. So they're taking some food waste and the manure from their farm, and they're producing electricity that's being sold out to the grid. So all kinds of innovation going on our farms.
Do you have any wish list for the legislature this year, things that you would like to see done, not done, or undone?
Sure. We every year, Connecticut Farm Bureau sets our legislative priorities. This was a challenge and has been a challenging legislative session because everything's been done virtually and remote, so we can't have that interaction in the halls of the Capitol that we like to have to get our legislative initiatives through. We want to see continued support for anaerobic digesters. We think that's important for contributing to Connecticut's renewable energy portfolio, as well as it helps out our dairy farmers in generating additional revenue. And it's just a great technology. So there's some tweaks we'd like to see to our anaerobic digester legislation to continue to allow more of those projects to come online. We do have an initiative. We'd like to see some tax relief for our aquaculture industry and our current use law. So we're working on that. And then there's always the old do no harm. So, but it's been a good session. We appreciate those legislators that understand and support all the hard work that our farmers do.
Talk a little more about anaerobic digestion. This is taking food waste and making energy, essentially?
Well, the first digester in the state was up at the Freund Farm up in the northwestern part of the state, and they just take manure from their cows, and then they produce energy with it, and then the waste, the solids that come out, they put into their patented cow pots, which are planting pots that are made out of cow manure. A patented product. They do a great job with that. But what the anaerobic digester does is it basically captures the methane that normally would go up into the air. It captures that methane and through a digesting process generates either biogas, which can go right into the gas line, into natural gas lines, or it produces, there's a engineering process and it allows that gas to be turned into electricity. And some of the farms that are looking to install digesters are doing just the manure from their farms. Other digesters, like some of the smaller herds, the 300 head herd, like on Fort Hill Farm, they're subsidizing that digester with food waste. They're taking in primarily right now fats, oils, and greases, and it provides a place for those, that food waste to go versus the alternative, which may be landfills or trucking it somewhere. And it actually, that food waste can also go into the digester with the manure from the farm, and through the digestive process, it creates energy. And it's a renewable energy, and it's a great way to get rid of our food waste, and the farms generate some income from the sale of that electrical back to the grid. Plus, it gives them a way to find a home for their manure so that it's less that has to go out on their fields. So it's just a phenomenal technology. It's actually been going on in other parts of the world and in other parts of the country. Connecticut is a little behind in other parts of the country and the world in this technology, but hopefully with some good legislation and some interest in this, we'll see more of them come online on our dairy farms.
In our last couple of minutes, I know dairy farmers often live and die by milk prices. Where are those now, and how are dairy farmers in Connecticut doing?
The milk prices are not where we would like them to see. I'm not up to speed. I should be on where the latest milk prices are, but they can certainly always improve. I think we're holding our own. We have just under 100 dairy farms left in the state, but we've seen some consolidation. Some of the existing dairy farms have purchased herds from dairy farmers that have gone out of dairy farming, but it's also important to understand that those farms that may not be milking anymore are still farming. They may be producing crops, they may be doing custom work. So sometimes when we say that dairy farm went out, it doesn't mean that that farm is going out of business. It's just that they're not milking any cows anymore. But those herds are being absorbed by other farms. So we're still producing about the same amount of milk, and we're optimistic that the dairy farms that we have left, with some adjustment in the marketplace, will continue to stay viable. And anaerobic digesters and direct consumer marketing, like what the Modern Milkman is, it is all helping to sustain these dairy farms.
If people live near farms and want to know where they can find what's produced there, what's the best place to go to?
I would send them to the Connecticut Department of Agriculture. Their marketing department does a really nice job of showcasing where the farms are. So many of our farms now, like many businesses, are taking advantage of social media. So I don't think it's very hard to, find your local farm strawberries, and I'm sure you'll get a hit from a local farm that is showcasing their product on social media. But certainly the Department of Agriculture is also a good place to go.
She is Joan Nichols, Executive Director of the Connecticut Farm Bureau Association. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much, Aaron, and go frequent a local farm.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.